Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's season three of Is This a Ghost?
And we are in Coast Town.
We're in top form. And I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously, but who does sometimes remember to tell me, let's check the timestamp here, for 15 minutes in that I forgot to do the intro.
I mean,
we should go back and do that.
Yeah. It's the miracle of having an audio engineer.
Yep.
Today's Easter, by the way, for the listening audience. Yeah.
And the podcast has risen.
Mm-hmm.
We're back, baby. yeah. How was your Easter?
Actually really good. It was fantastic. Oh, you have a drink? That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's what we do on this podcast.
Oh man, I've been eating all day, not drinking.
You want to go get a drink to drink?
Yeah, I probably should. Hang on. All right.
Or a bag of off-brand chips. What do we see back there?
Some olive oil. No. I'm gonna get booze. I'm gonna get booze.
Okay. Oh boy. I knew this mask would come in handy.
Yeah. I thought that was a filter. I walked by and I was like, can you breathe in that?
Podcasting mask.
Is it a breathing? No. Okay.
No, it's not one of those. It's a mask I had, and I got it, and I was like, well, this is way too small for my giant face.
Right.
But I guess it works if you have a hat on. You can just put it right into the hat.
You could also just paint parts of your face black.
Yeah, but this has texture. Look at it. This is Squid Game.
Yeah,
texture.
Yeah. That's nice. That's very nice.
Yeah. This is 3D printed, my friend.
Wow.
Real 3D.
You have a 3D printer?
No.
You have money to pay someone with a 3D printer?
Yeah. I did until I bought this mask. Now I have nothing, but it was worth every penny. Well, my room, my studio is... I think we talked about it at some point.
It's Squid Game themed.
Squid Game themed.
I recognize it. Yeah.
But all is, obviously the light. But then I have these green and pink sound panels up here. But then I also bought some stuff to put on the walls. But then I got this and I was like, well, I don't know how to put this on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it just hangs out here.
Right.
And now it's just by me all the time.
You can put it on your face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are things that you could use to put it on a wall, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't gotten that far.
You can buy mannequin heads. Staple them to the wall and then put the mask on. Staple by the head. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. That's yeah, that's an option.
I mean, you got nothing over your other shoulder right now. So it's pretty bare over there.
All right. Yeah, we'll see if a stapled to the wall mannequin head wearing a terrifying mask works.
Yeah, and if I recall the perspective of your podcasting studio, that would be just above the head of the guest bed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So
when are you coming back?
In case you get too many pesky guests, wearing you down. Well, I have one simple fix.
Aaron's mom is coming to town next week, so this would be a really good tryout. Sorry, Vicky. You've got a severed doll head above your bed. Oh boy. Well, we're back. It's been a while since we've done this.
It has been weeks, months.
I don't think it's been months.
I mean, it feels like months.
Yeah. We should do a recap. We should catch up. We haven't talked in a while. Mm. Listen, and if you're one of the people listening to the podcast and you don't like it when we do this, today you might want to skip ahead to minute 52, 53?
Yeah-ish. Somewhere in there.
We got a lot to catch up on. First and most importantly, how was Disney World?
It was outrageously good. It was outrageously fun.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was outrageously fun.
Yeah, I didn't. I still didn't. Even after I dropped some hints that I really wanted an invite, I didn't get one.
Yeah. Well, so now they've started charging by the foot there. And so you're really expensive now to go.
Oh, man.
So, well, because all the rides, they're made for little kids. And so, you have to buy two tickets.
Well, yeah, but then June is probably pretty cheap, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we really kind of cancel each other out.
June also doesn't ride anything. She doesn't eat anything. And she doesn't agree to anything. So Disney World.
She's expensive in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, if you were to take your family to Disney World, you have two girls, a wife, yourself. Mm-hmm. If you were like, man, what else should we bring? Let's bring like 150-pound stone we drag around with us.
150 pounds?
I mean, that's what it feels like. So just dragging it, you know, grating down the middle of the asphalt alleyways. Like, man, what are you doing there, sir? Well, you know, really wanted to come with. Not really sure why.
And we had some money burning the hole in our pocket, yeah. So we thought we'll buy this rocket ticket. Oh, man. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, hadn't been there with the family in about 8 years, I guess. So a lot of new things for them.
Aaron's never been to Disney World.
Oh,
we've
wow.
been to Disneyland a lot, but I've only been there once, and she's never been.
I don't know enough about the different, like, I know there's a lot of similar, if not identical, attractions between the two.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about Disneyland to know, you know.
Yeah, what Disneyland is great. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Love it. We'll go every day of my life if that were an option. Mm-hmm. It's a lot smaller than Disney World, though. Mm-hmm. So, like, Disney World has, what, they have six parks now? What
they have,
like,
four parks. But each
four
park
parks plus water park.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Four parks plus maybe two water parks.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And then, obviously, every park has, you know, four to six lands.
Yeah. So, Disneyland is, like, one of those parks.
Hmm. Which has nothing to say.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No complaints. Well, that's good. I'm trying to think of what was I doing last time we did this? I had been to Austin already, right?
I believe you had been to Austin. Yeah, you were preparing to leave for yet another trip.
Yes. Went on a trip to Virginia,
mm-hmm.
to rural Virginia,
mm-hmm.
did some stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's see.
And then you were going to go on another trip. You're going to go on
another trip. I went on a New Orleans spooky trip and just got back from that 2 nights ago. 3 nights ago?
I don't know. It's been a lot.
I've traveled more this month than I have traveled in my entire life. You were invited, just to make it clear. And I wanted you to go, but the people who wanted you to go the most were our listeners, and you really let them down.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan and I did fine without you. Mm. We saw some really spooky stuff in New Orleans.
Mm.
It was great.
Any sort of So are you going to be able to write all this off on your taxes then, it sounds like?
Yes. Oh, for sure. Cool. Yeah, that's why. Awesome. Yeah. We brought a microphone and we were like, we have to record at least one person talking about ghosts so we can write this off. And mission accomplished.
Is This a Ghost LLC has paid for itself once again.
We did talk to a bartender at the old Absinthe House, which is supposedly very haunted, and she was an absolute trip. I think she might have been mentally unstable, but she was a blast. And I don't know what we're going to do with that audio yet. Ryan and I are kicking around some ideas. We're going to think about it. But it was fun. And then I posted some videos and photos and stuff on our Facebook and Instagram accounts.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was spooky. It was cool. It was a lot of jazz. It's a food. It was so much food.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good food.
Lots of food down there.
Lots of food that I ate a lot of. That was great.
Cool.
And that's been my time. Now let's get into the section of the show where we talk about X-Men 97.
I'm very sorry. Give me a bit of a pivot here, guys.
I told you.
Yeah.
Minute 57 is where you want to land. We don't need to talk too long about X-Men 97.
Right.
However, I do want to point out to everyone that when I was on one of my trips, I think the New Orleans trip, you had texted me to drop what I'm doing and leave and go back to the hotel room and watch X-Men 97. And I was on Frenchman Street listening to music. So I did not take your advice. But in hindsight, I kind of wish I would have.
Honestly, you're never going to get that time back.
No.
You really aren't.
No. I couldn't log into Disney Plus for some reason at my hotel. When I got home, I watched the first episode, as you know, because we texted about it. Oh, my God. Man, what a joy.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait to finish the rest of the season. So excited. Hearing that theme song play again just gives me chills.
Yeah. And it is... It still makes me laugh when the theme song starts up, like really starts getting going, and the very first thing you see is that button in the bottom of the screen that says "skip intro," and you're like, "What the, why the fuck
why
do you think
I'm
here?"
I'm here? What a dumb question.
Oh yeah, I like to skip the episode too. Uh huh. Sure. Yeah. let's just skip straight to my funeral. Why don't we? It doesn't really matter at this point.
I would love to see the analytics on that, of like compared to other shows, how many people do not click that button. Oh, man, that theme song is just etched into my brain and into my soul, into my heart. So good. Anyway, you've watched the whole season?
Yes. Well, thus far, I think they're releasing on Wednesdays.
Oh, do they release like a few first and then one at a time? Okay.
Yeah, I think they've released three episodes so far.
Oh, that's it? Oh, I'm not too far behind.
So. No, you're right there.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great.
Invincible's also on two or three-ish.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Gets too much going on.
It's pretty fun. There's a whole bunch goes on in there.
Boy, that's a violent show. That is a shocking show to watch.
The splat is back.
Big splat. What else? Anything else that we need to catch up on while everyone listens?
I am all caught up myself. Really excited to get back into it.
All right. This is great. Okay. So now are you ready to hear Ghost Story?
I'm ready to hear it again. Yes.
Can you guess the year? I bet you can't.
No, it was 1946.
Yeah, see, I knew. You don't even listen when
I talk. Not closely, no. There's a lot of numbers getting thrown around.
Well, in 1732, an Irishman named John Lewis found himself in the great American colony of Virginia. Now, Virginia was, of course, the big British colony.
Right, yeah.
It was the first British town, Jamestown, which I think we'll come back to someday. Jamestown's got some ghosts, for sure. So we'll talk about Jamestown. But not today, because Lewis didn't do that. He finds himself in Virginia, and, oh, fun fact.
Wham!
Virginia is named... Oh, I forgot to ask. Have you picked up on the new fun fact sound effect?
I have. Yes, it is. I'm very proud. Very proud.
I think Jeremy was so excited when he had that idea, and you can see why. It's very good. So, fun fact, Virginia. Do you know what Virginia got its name?
I only know that it's for lovers. That's all, really the only thing I know about it.
That's an uncomfortable slogan, huh?
I mean, I didn't pick it.
But I could, you would have.
I could see if Maryland was like, oh, you know what Virginia is? Virginia's just for lovers. People are like, ugh, what the fuck's
that mean? Gross.
You know, Virginia's like, what did we do? But no, they picked it. They chose it themselves. They could have chosen anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Virginia, it's for virgins. Virginia, it's for, you know, shipping. I mean, there are lots of things.
It's for Santa Claus. Believing in Santa Claus?
Yeah. All kinds of positive things. Instead, it's for... Like, you know, your mom and stepdad getting it on.
That's like, the state is one giant heart-shaped jacuzzi tub.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Stepdad.
Do you have $39.99? Virginia is for you.
And Virginia will vibrate while you are in it.
Virginia doesn't ask for your real driver's license. Just give Virginia a fake name. It's totally fine.
Virginia, you're not a cop, are you?
Virginia, you have to tell me.
Virginia is actually named after Queen Elizabeth I.
Oh, yeah. Of course. That's why they called it Elizabeth. What?
Elizabeth Virginia. it's called Virginia because Queen Elizabeth I is known as the Virgin Queen.
Oh.
And that suck. What a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
We name our entire state after the fact that she was incredibly powerful and still had a complete inability to get laid.
Hmm.
That's not ideal. Anyway, so Lewis and his family, they find themselves in central western Virginia in the Shenandoah Valley. Got the Blue Ridge Mountains on the in the east, and the Alleghenies to the west.
Oof, you're in the holler right there.
You're in the holler, that is for sure. You want to explain to our, maybe, I don't know if, that's probably not a term that has made it across the ocean. The holler?
Ocean. Yeah.
Holler, yeah. The, you want to explain to our UK friends?
Technically, the holler is when a mountain or a ridge comes down and there's two ridges that come down near each other, the valley that gets made between those two ridges is called the holler.
And do you want to say, that's technically what it means. Do you want to know, give kind of some context for the American Midwest and South?
No, I may, maybe you can add some color to it. I'm just the definition guy here. I'm not the color man.
Like an engineer's. Yeah, this is typically the place where you'll find a lot of people drinking moonshine from jugs.
Mm-hmm. And creating moonshine from
from
whatever. God only knows.
From who knows where they got that liquid. Gigging frogs. You can gig frogs in most hollers for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where all the frogs lay.
So the frogs get gigged.
Mm-hmm.
You want to describe gigging frogs?
UK so friends. If you've eaten with a fork, then you've gigged your own dinner, basically. Guess, right?
Okay, yeah, I guess essentially. That's true.
I mean, if you strapped a flashlight to your fork and you snuck up on your like pasta con broccoli or something like that, you've basically gigged your own dinner.
Pasta con broccoli. You go to Pasta House recently?
It's on my mind at the moment. I'm sorry.
All right. So anyway, so that's where John and family find themselves. And now you may be wondering how an Irishman ended up in the wilderness of the American colonies in 1732.
So did the Irishman.
He had fled Ireland in 1720 after killing his landlord.
Oh, well, I mean, victimless crime.
The guy had raised his rent. So,
well, I mean,
what do you expect? Mm-hmm. What do you expect? In this economy?
Can go one of two ways.
Now, to be fair, the landlord was a man named Sir Mungo Campbell.
Oh, well,
Mungo.
You're doing everybody a service right there. Even Mungo's probably like, yeah, I get it. I get it.
I've raised rent.
Yeah. Mungo raised rent. What are you doing with gig to Mungo?
Why you strap flashlight to fork with Mungo? Lewis protested the high rent, and then Mungo came to Lewis's house and fired a musket into the house.
Oh.
Quote, wound. Yeah. He had it coming. Mm. Quote, wounding Lewis's wife in the hand and killing Lewis's disabled brother.
Oh.
So, I think this is justified. This is fine. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with this.
Yeah. I'm definitely not paying the rent increase at that point.
Oh no.
No.
No. Need that money for a funeral now. So Lewis then stormed out of the house with a shillelagh and beat Campbell to absolute death.
Oh my goodness.
Do you want to describe to our American listeners what a shillelagh is?
It's a walking stick, basically, but it's got a bit of a knob on it, you know.
It's got a knob.
It can do some knob whacking right there. And I guess he gave him a gold knob whacking. Anyway,
clean one on that so we can use it. We're going to use that in our promo for this episode, sure. I think. Do you want to take a clean one? Go ahead.
He walked out the door and he gave him the knob whacking of his life.
Perfect. Jeremy, can you cut that out and set that aside for us, please? That's all we need. So Lewis gives him the knob whacking of his life, beats Campbell to death, and then he also beats Campbell's steward to death as well.
Oh.
Now, I don't know what.
What is a steward there for?
I don't know.
To like reload the musket? Intern,
yeah. Right? Yeah, I think.
He's probably the guy like trying to like really quickly pack the musket while his boss is getting beat to death. Give me like another 3 minutes and I swear to God, you are in trouble.
So then Lewis flees to Portugal and then to Philadelphia, then to Pennsylvania, and finally to Virginia.
Huh. It's like a vacation, really.
Yeah, he's having a great time, I think.
Yeah.
I hear Portugal is wonderful.
I don't know why we leave there. Maybe he was just collecting like places started with P. I don't know. It's something to think about.
Yeah. And is not good at spelling.
Yeah.
He ended up in Virginia and thought, oh no.
This is where I stop, I guess, because I ran out of P's. I thought for sure
this was a silent P, but no. Eventually, by the way, the Irish authorities did pardon him of any crime.
Hmm.
So that's good. They also granted him some Virginian land as compensation for the attack on his home. Maybe that's why he ended up in Virginia.
Oh. Is he Scottish or Irish? I forgot.
He's Irish.
So does he?
I guess they had some land. Were they part of Britain at this time? God, half our listeners.
I'm so sorry,
screaming
British listeners
to their phones right now. Was Ireland part of Britain in 1732? Oh, God, I want to read an article.
I just want a yes or no, ChatGPT.
Oh, yeah, ChatGPT.
Yeah.
That's worked out good for us in the past.
It's definitely not going to give us 17 paragraphs about this.
Britain in 1732. ChatGPT says, in 1732, Ireland was not part of Britain.
Easy, good, close, done.
But... Hold on, there's more. But it was under the same monarchy in a personal union, meaning the same person was the monarch of both England and thereby Britain after the 1707 Act of Union with Scotland and Ireland. This arrangement existed because England and Scotland had come under the same crown.
You went too far. No was sufficient.
I guess not. I guess not. Anyway, the Irish had some land in Virginia.
And they're giving up because, I mean, what do they care? Honestly,
they're gonna see that shit. Who cares? Who go to Virginia from Ireland? Please, as someone who's been to both Ireland and Virginia, you can give away that Virginia land.
I'll be granting you one holler. It's just for you. Your own holler.
How many forks do you have? We'll give you a flashlight. Uh oh. There's a ghost coming down your stairs.
No, ghost.
Oh, it's awkward.
hot ghost wife. I'm sorry, guys.
When did she become a ghost?
Oh, she doesn't know yet.
Oh, no. This is a Sixth Sense situation.
Yeah, kind of.
That's awkward.
Yeah, you've
love
been
you.
So she knows now, but she is still bringing the wine upstairs. So.
Well, that's good. Good for her. Good for her. okay. Where are we here? So he gets some Virginian land. 4 years later. So he's living it up in the holler. 4 years later, a man named William Beverly rolls into town.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Beverly. Nope. Beverly was a wealthy. Mm-hmm. Not Beverly was a Belfie. That wouldn't make any sense. Beverly.
Did I tell you about Beverly at Disney World? Did I tell you about this?
No.
Oh, my goodness. This is funny you brought it up. See, if you go to Epcot, Have you been to Epcot?
I've been to Epcot, yeah.
Okay, so in Epcot, there is like a Coca-Cola store or something like that. Some big like Coca-Cola branded thing. Well, anyway, on the back side of the Coca-Cola store, there's, I don't know, there's like a Coca-Cola from around the world section or something like that. Sure. And they have a bunch of soda fountains that are free for anybody. But you're only given like a Dixie cup, right? And there's challenge accepted. Well, yeah, exactly. But the only Coca-Cola that comes from these drinking fountains, from these dispensers, it are Coca-Cola products from around the world. And they are not
actual Coke.
Right, not actual Coke. It's like Russian Sprite that's actually made with like pears instead of, you know, lemon and lime.
And for some reason, Commie Red.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola in China, which is flavored
also with Commie Red. Yeah, it's weird.
Which is flavored with plum and tastes a lot like, well, I couldn't place the taste of it initially. It was horrible. It was just absolutely terrible. And then Gloria, God love her, she is just the most sympathetic kid. She takes a drink and she goes, well, that tastes like mulch. And immediately I was like, yeah, mulch was the word. Mulch was the word I was looking for. Absolutely mulch. Anyway, Beverly is why we got into this. At the far left hand of the drinking fountain, or of the soda fountain, there was a nondescript blue sign that just said Beverly. And Stella tricked me into drinking some Beverly. And it is, it has to taste like how paint tastes. I've never tasted paint before. I haven't.
Look, this is a safe space. You can tell us if you've tasted
paint before. So I've tasted small amounts of paint before, but it's made apparently entirely with like the bad part of grapefruits. You know, like grapefruit has like a citrusy thing, and then there's on the back end, you're like, oh, but this is also like a flavor that would tell you in nature, don't ever touch this again. Yeah.
Beverly is a carbonated soft drink marketed as a non-alcoholic aperitif.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Boy. Huh.
And anyway.
That takes all the fun parts out of the aperitif.
Well, yeah, it does take the fun part of tricking your friends into drinking it and making them want to die for the next 4 hours. So,
Was this like the Malort of soda?
It's very much the Malort of soda. It was so bad that when we were like riding the bus home, you know, 3-4 hours later, just talking about it with my kids, the taste immediately came back into the back of your mouth. Like, why can I taste something? We've eaten like 2 meals since I've tasted this thing. Anyway, that is Beverly. And so if you ever find yourself at Epcot and you would like to trick your spouse or child or significant other or grandparent into ruining their day, Beverly's the answer.
I mean, here's the deal. I'll tell you, I like a bitter aperitif. I like a Campari.
You know what?
I don't hate a Malort.
I would love if you could try some Beverly. I would love it. Nothing would make me happier.
Fine. Aaron, we're going to Disney World. We have to. I'm sorry.
I think I even read that it originated in the Italian market. And then
that's what the internet says, yes.
And then eventually it became so unpopular that they stopped selling it there. But it was so notorious at Epcot that they kept it in the Epcot international machines. And they only manufacture it for the Epcot sampler machine.
Is that true?
Now. According to the internet. So
I love when you eschew capitalism for a good dare.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Nobody likes this to a degree that we cannot sell it for money anymore.
But it is hilarious when people drink it. Okay.
Anyway, so back to your Beverly.
This is a different one, I think.
Is it? Okay.
So William Beverly rolls into town. Now, Beverly's a wealthy landowner who made a whole bunch of money off of plantation slavery.
Hmm.
So we don't love that.
It might be named after him, then. I'm not sure. It's...
it's
it's pretty bad.
It's a different kind of terrible.
Yeah.
He came from a line of wealthy landowners. Obviously, he inherits a lot of land also right around John Lewis's property. Beverly also has a lot of connections, and in 1736, he was granted 118,000 acres of land by the British Crown.
Woo!
So he's a big deal.
It's a couple.
He's got a lot going on.
There's a lot of hollers.
Yeah, so many hollers. So Beverly and Lewis become pretty good friends. Beverly establishes a town there in the Shenandoah Valley, and he calls it Beverly's Mill Place.
Hmm. Okay.
It's Mill Place. Along the nose,
sure. But, yeah.
But you know, it's fine. And then he hires Lewis on to work the property to be his surveyor.
Oh my gosh. The cake gig.
Oh my God.
Throughout history.
Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to question you?
Yeah.
Well, I did the surveying and it's very complicated and a lot of math, but you'll see where I place those rocks. That's the boundary. Are you sure? Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Whatever you say, guy.
Great life.
Can you imagine how many other surveyors you have to murder if you're a surveyor, though? Because, like, that's got to be. That's, yeah, that's a pretty like common occurrence.
The Highlander of of manual labor.
There can be only one.
I think it's this rock. Fuck you. So Lewis helped him parcel out the property and sell it off. And in exchange, Beverly granted him more land until eventually Lewis owned 9,313 acres himself.
Woo.
From a long way from killing his landlord in Ireland. Let's see. In 1747, Beverly's Mill Place was officially designated a town. So they were like, well, you can be a town, but you've got to have a real name because this name sucks.
Yeah, yeah, pick one word, guy. Like three words. Yeah. It's too many words.
Yeah, one word is the word. So Beverly renames, he decides to rename it. He renames it in honor of the wife of the Royal Lieutenant Governor. Now the governor's name, the Lieutenant Governor's name was Sir William Gooch.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife's name was Lady Rebecca Stanton.
Not Lady Rebecca Gooch.
No.
No.
No, which is too bad. Because Gooch is a hell of a name. the town is officially called Stanton, Virginia.
Would that weird you out? Like if somebody was
called Gooch?
No. Well, I mean, okay, yes. Yeah, there's a list here. If somebody else named the town they were founding after your wife, would that weird you out?
Oh, I thought you were going to say after me, and I thought, no, that's
no, nice, you're not the wife.
Terrific.
Of course, yeah, who wouldn't love a town being named after them? I don't know about named after their wife, though. That's a little much.
This is a good question. What did Lady Rebecca Stanton look like? Not that looks are everything.
Right, but I mean,
it could give us some insight into.
Yeah. There's a town-worthy look, and there's maybe not a town-worthy look.
Is this... What am I looking at here?
You're down a rabbit hole right now. I'm not entirely sure where you are.
I am. I don't feel comfortable sharing this photo because I don't think it's probably her. By photo, I mean painting. Here's a reenactment of her. Would you like to see someone who reenacted her? Is that helpful? Is that anything?
So if you Google image search Lady Rebecca Stanton, you get a different person, by the way. I'm assuming.
Could be the same.
Unless she was a thirst trap model in 2019.
Are we getting different?
I don't know.
Google search results?
I'm getting a lot of search results right now.
For Lady Rebecca. Oh, are you spelling it incorrectly? It's Stanton is Stanton.
Ah, okay. Don't do it the other way. I mean, you can.
Hello.
Yeah. Right.
I would name a town after. For sure. For sure.
Huh. Oh, well, yeah.
She's a delight.
Yeah, these women are boring.
Yeah. Anyway, one of them was banging his wife and named the town after her. Good question. So Stanton is officially a town now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because of its relatively good climate and central location, Stanton becomes pretty important to the crown this time. and it was actually the capital of Virginia colony for a while. Mm. Its courthouse became an important meeting place for people like Patrick Henry and Daniel Boone.
Oof.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Daniel Boone, big in Missouri history, of course.
Absolutely.
You ever been to the Daniel Boone home?
Oh, I have not.
Right across the Missouri? Well, I lived much closer to it than you did. And so in grade school, it was a place we would go for field trips. And we went out there when I was a kid. And it's cool. This is a Daniel Boone home, and it's a log cabin. It's, you know, it's a great, great little museum.
Who doesn't
they have,
that?
Of course, a gift shop. And I was like, I want to buy something from Daniel Boone home. But I was, you know, 8 years old. So I had like $5. And so what I came home with was this very, very small miniature oil lamp.
Oh.
Which I thought was really cool.
Sounds
when
really
I got
cool.
it. But in hindsight, hello, in hindsight, you know, 30 some odd years later, I don't know what I thought I was going to do with that.
All that laundry's wet. You can close it. You can close it. I will run after when I come back upstairs.
We don't. Jeremy doesn't have a dryer filter. Please don't run it.
I will turn it on when I'm finished with this. Thank you so much. Appreciate the privacy. Thank you. Bye. Good night.
Bye. Good to see you.
Anyway, I'm building a shed.
Sundays are a real hotbed of activity in here. This is why we do Monday recordings usually. What are we talking about?
I don't know at this point.
Well, let's move on.
Daniel Boone. And then you got the oil lamp, right? You got the oil lamp.
Which is cool. And then, but in hindsight, I don't know what to do with that. It was like a 3-inch tall oil lamp. Mm-hmm. And can't light it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can't put oil in it.
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is break it, really.
Right, yeah. And they get in trouble for doing that.
Yep. That was a mistake. Anyway, so Stanton grows pretty quickly. There are taverns.
That was the story. That's fine. That's fine.
It's not a good story.
No.
But it made me think of it. Anyway, Stanton grows quickly. There are taverns. There are hotels. There's even a lunatic asylum nearby.
Oh, wow.
We may revisit that some future episode because that becomes pretty important in the ghost canon of our country. There were also a lot of plantations, unfortunately. In the mid-1800s, slaves made up about 20% of the population in Virginia. So, or maybe Stanton in particular. I don't know if it's local or statewide. Doesn't really matter. Bad either way. So the town's growing like gangbusters, which means eventually the railroad wants in on that action.
Sure, of course.
So in 1854, the Virginia Central Railroad arrives in Stanton, Virginia. This is where our story really gets going.
Oof, story really gets chugging.
Toot toot. The station became a pretty popular stop. There were cargo trains and passenger trains both, so that's very good. So businesses start springing up around the station. More hotels, more taverns, warehouses, all of it becomes a little bit of a boomtown. And very quickly, this part of town becomes known as the Wharf.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I mean...
It is one of those terms that makes immediate sense and then soon after makes no sense.
Classically, wharf has to do with water, right?
Yeah, now it is a place where, you know, obviously ships will come in.
Right, sure. But I mean, trains, ships of the land. Really?
Ships of the land. Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. So this is the wharf. And this part of town is still called the wharf today. And if you visit Stanton, Virginia, as I recently did, you'll be confused when people say, go to the wharf. And you say, this is severely landlocked, right? It's a little confusing. It's a whole scene. So anyway, so everything's growing. Then in 1861, of course, the Civil War breaks out. And things in Virginia get real weird. Virginia was a slave state, but they also voted against secession.
Okay.
Which is pretty unique in the realm of slave states at this time. But then a couple weeks later, they were like, wait, no, we do secede.
Yeah.
We take this back. I don't know what you're thinking. We're very uncomfortable here in the North with all our slavery. So they do eventually join the Confederacy. Excuse me. And here's a fun fact.
Wham!
The Union government was so mad at Virginia for switching sides, they carved off 50 counties of the territory and made that into West Virginia.
Oh, Oh, wow.
That's how we got West Virginia.
Just pure rage.
Which is ironic because now West Virginia is way, way more anti-union than way, way more anti-North than Virginia. But I do love that spite.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. Anyway, so during the Civil War, there were a lot of people who sided with the Union in Virginia. So Virginia ended up being one of three states that actually had two governments during the Civil War, one for the North and one for the South. Can you name the other two?
I'm going to say no.
Okay. One was Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah, I'm going to say Tennessee is the other.
No, actually, you're going to feel so stupid. It's Missouri.
Oh, yeah. I feel pretty stupid about Missouri most of the time. So
that makes a lot of sense. This is actually why we named Reconstruction Coffee. There was a time for a few years that Aaron and I and my sister ran a coffee roasting company in Missouri. We named it Reconstruction Coffee as kind of a throwback to this very split history during the Civil War. Anyway. So Kentucky and Missouri were also split states. So anyway, it should come as no surprise then that during the Civil War, the Stanton train station started looking pretty good to both the Union and Confederate armies. Both armies, quote, immediately designated the station as a mobilization point, an army depot, a commissary post, and a training and mount center.
What a different world. Like nowadays, if there was something that was like of extreme importance to two sides in a conflict like this, they would just take turns bombing into a bigger and bigger crater until eventually it was just all crater.
Well, we're not done with the story.
It's of extreme importance. Also, it's a crater now.
Yep. Mount Center, by the way, I do think that Stanton is missing out on the opportunity to sell t-shirts from the train station and say something like, I got mounted at in Stanton, Virginia, or I... That's it. That's my only idea, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you think? You like it?
You got time. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
At the rate we're going, you're going to have like four t-shirts ready by the end of the episode. So
this is a good time to say also, you've noticed probably, dear listener, that I mean, gosh, it's hard to find advertisers these days. Mm-hmm. And if you want to help us keep this show going and do good things and get bigger and maybe give some money to our friends who do all the hard work for this show, you could go to our website at isthisaghost.com and you could find some really fun merch. We haven't put anything new up in a while. I think the syphilis shirt was the last one. We're letting that marinate a bit. But yeah, we have some promising leads here in this episode, I think. Anyway, so Union General David Hunter figures the train station is probably good for the South. It was good for the North. Right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't want that.
Right.
So in 1864, he burns the whole thing to the ground.
Well, there we go. Tale is old as time. Proud American tradition.
Oh, boy. He also didn't seem... Now, I do want to say, we default... He's a good one. By default, because he's with the Union.
Right, sure.
Having said that, he was not too concerned about like warning people that he was going to set fire to the station. Mm-hmm. And there were some people inside when he did it. So that's not... It's not ideal. History is complicated.
Well,
and
yeah.
Messy. And some people died in that fire.
I can imagine he wasn't setting the fire quietly. You know, he was probably, you know...
So you're going to victim blame?
I think he was probably a hootin' and a hollering, right?
Absolutely hootin' and hollering.
Horses braying and, you know, muskets being shot off and whatnot. And then, you know, everybody inside the train station is probably like, well, yeah, okay, but when I'm done in the gift shop, I'll leave. But I really want to, I've got a mug. I really want to bring going on here.
Yeah. It's really good. It says I got mounted in Virginia and I am, I really want to bring it home. So a lot of people did die in the fire. Now, the following year, 1865, is when the South surrendered, is the word I'm looking for, to the North. And Stanton starts to recover. They build a brand new train station. Same spot, new station. Mm-hmm. This one lasted for a while,
How long is a while?
Great question. Which is where we get to the next segment of our story, where we meet a 17-year-old girl named Myrtle Ruth Knox. Myrtle lived in Kansas City, Missouri. She was a telegrapher. And that job sucked, I think. She didn't like it, at least. And I don't think I would like it either.
Money's money.
Well, I don't know, but learning Morse code.
You need to work at a desk all day. I mean, it's. I can imagine back then, desk job was probably pretty keen, pretty nice. Not a whole lot
Probably true. yeah, I guess there were a lot worse options. That's a good point. Every other option actually was a lot worse. So, okay. Fair point. But as most children, she did not appreciate that. And she worked at the Midland Hotel, taking and sending telegraphs. And she was so, so fucking bored. But in the fall of 1889, a company of opera singers comes to town.
Oh,
they are touring a new operetta called The Pearl of Pekin.
Hmm. I bet they are impossible to telegraph. They probably come down. I'd like to send the telegraph. You're like, oh, just hang on. How do I do a long O? Do I hold the O button?
Oh boy,
for a long time.
I like it's interesting. I'm learning a lot about what you think a telegraph is. The Pearl of Pekin is. Do you know? Are you familiar with the town of Pekin?
Pekin, Georgia?
Nope.
Then I'm
That's Pekin.
Oh, I am not then. No.
I don't know. Pekin is in Illinois. Mm. It's not too far from where our friend Cody lives.
Mm. Mid-state.
Yeah. I went on one date with a girl from Pekin once.
Oh.
It was fine.
I'll ask you
that. And I've never been to the town, but I know that it exists. So this is a Midwest opera, so it may have been locals doing opera. Which sounds just wow, so good. Wow. So they're doing this operetta across the state of Missouri, if that tells you how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Myrtle was apparently an incredibly talented singer, truly.
Hmm.
So she auditions, and she convinces the company to take her on as a chorus girl. They didn't want to because she was pretty young, but she said, no, I'm good. And they were like, well, you have an incredible voice, so you can join as a chorus girl. Now, Myrtle's dad did not like this.
Mm.
He said, absolutely not. You've got a great job as a telegrapher in this hotel. And he forbade her to join the troupe.
Oh, well, that's the end of that.
Yep. So she said, okay, Dad, I respect you and your wishes. So thank you for always knowing what's best for me. how old is Stella now? She's,
she's 13.
Getting pretty close.
God. Yeah. Yeah. And she listens to everything I say, like gospel. So it's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It took some convincing to get her to not change the laundry to the dryer.
Correct. Several while I'm ago, recording. But, right. Yeah. Literally, like, that's the dryer right there.
Yep.
That's it.
So, so you understand his plight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. Honestly, if Stella was like, I really want to join the opera tomorrow and, travel across Missouri, I'd probably be like, it's not a bad idea, really.
Wait, so you wouldn't live here for a while?
Just keep your phone on. It's fine. Just keep your phone on.
Yeah, and that's what the dad, I think, told Myrtle. Mm-hmm. It's like, turn your iPhone on and
find my iPhone. Yeah, I'm going to tie this string to your foot and you just yank on it every couple of days and I'll know that you're there.
You take this can, I'll hold this can. Yeah. It's a really long string. we'll communicate. So the dad does not, he says you cannot join the troupe. And so Myrtle obviously joins the troupe, which I mean, she goes from telegrapher to professional performer overnight, which is really the dream.
Yeah.
So she joins the tour, they travel around performing their way through Missouri. And the whole time is Myrtle's father is following the tour.
Oh,
which is, I want to say I understand that instinct. I don't think it's gonna. I don't think it's gonna do what you think it's gonna do, Myrtle's dad.
It might have just been like a keeping an eye on her. Like, okay, I know she's not gonna do what I tell her to do, but I can't. I want to make sure she's.
You could think that. Okay, Myrtle's father's on tour. At every stop, he's begging her to quit.
Well, but she doesn't.
That's true.
I don't hear any kidnapping. I don't hear any pillowcases or chloroform or anything like that. So I think
that's true. That didn't make it into the history.
That's very open-minded, I believe.
Yeah. So he's begging her to please quit and stop doing this, which of course only makes her want to do it more.
Oh, I'm sure.
And she's doing a really good job. She's very talented. And pretty soon she's elevated from chorus girl to a minor role.
Whoa.
So she actually has, you know, some gravitas on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show is, despite the fact that it's about Pekin, Illinois, apparently it becomes kind of popular. It's well received and they get invitations to tour the country.
Wow.
Oof. And so at this point, Myrtle was invited to continue working on the Eastern tour. I mean, this is a dream come true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For her.
Yeah. Completely. And now her dad gets to see the whole like Eastern seaboard. This is really exciting for him too.
Yeah. He gets to drive across the entire thing, chasing a train and what a journey. Now, on April 26th, 1890, they leave Missouri on the Chesapeake and Ohio train. The old C&O.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Myrtle had never been east. I doubt she's ever left Missouri. She's so excited. They're heading to Baltimore for their first stop. Baltimore is a great city. I don't know what it was like then, but mm-hmm. Great city now. Mm-hmm. Despite what the wire may tell you.
Yeah.
Baltimore. We had fun in Baltimore.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I also wouldn't, you know, judge them based on the strength of their bridges at the moment. But other than that, they're in, I think they're a great city.
Well, really. To be fair, that's DEI's fault.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah. It's a very inclusive bridge design.
Yeah.
And that's really was the downfall at the end. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the woke agenda is why that bridge fell. God. But she goes to Baltimore. She's heading to Baltimore, so she's very excited, and she hunkers down in the train that night, and she falls asleep in the sleeping car. I imagine just so excited about the future, mm-hmm. you know, and thinking about like all the possibilities, and mm-hmm. like, wow, I'm gonna live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Late that night,
late that very night,
the train winds its way up into the Allegheny Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
A little after midnight, they start their descent from the Alleghenies down into the Shenandoah Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a bit of a tricky run of track.
Mm. And we've talked about this before, about how going up a hill in a train,
yeah,
you know, tough.
Yeah.
Not that big a deal.
You know, yeah.
Going down a hill in a train.
Different.
Very hard. Very difficult.
Different.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah. Yeah, so the rails twist and turn through the mountains. They switch back, and they drop almost 100 feet in a very small amount of space
mm-hmm.
Before pulling into the station in Stanton, Virginia. It's a very steep grade. So as the train is descending, the brakeman does his job. He's like, well, mm-hmm. let's slow this train down a little bit. Let's liberally apply my brake. He applies that brake. But the train doesn't slow down.
Mm.
And this is a bad time to learn that your brakes are out. Quite possibly the worst mm-hmm. time to find that your brakes are indeed out. One of the passengers of the train was U.S. Attorney William Craig. He was in the smoking car when they made their descent to Stanton. Mm-hmm. And he said, doo-doo-doo-doo. He knew about a mile and a half before the station that the train, quote, was wild.
Mm-hmm.
According to Craig, quote, men became alarmed and tried to get up out of their seats. As soon as a man rose from the cushion in the swaying of the train would throw him against the side of the car.
So this guy lives, right? Unless he's like,
he does.
Unless he's like writing this down.
Like, right faster, right faster, right faster. Oh no. He does. He sustained some, I don't remember if I talk about the injuries that he will sustain. Not to spoil anything, this train doesn't do great.
He doesn't get off scot-free either.
No one gets off scot-free, but he does survive, certainly. Pretty much everyone on the train wakes up from the way the train is slamming around the mm-hmm. mountain. So there's two sleeping cars, and people are waking up. A lot of them are waking up because they are being literally thrown against the wall of mm-hmm. the car.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very bad scene. And that's true, too, for Myrtle, who was in her car with her birth mate, Edith Miller, and both were just holding on for dear life as a train approaches the last turn of this little descent.
Mm-hmm.
They've made it very far down the mountain, again, just careening around these curves. Like, it's going badly, but they're like, we're almost there.
Mm-hmm.
One more turn, everyone. It's the last turn, but it's also the most difficult turn.
And they are going as fast now as they ever have.
Correct. So they are only gaining speed. And this is the turn leading into the Stanton Station. Now I want to show you. I have some pictures of the Stanton Station. Mm-hmm. I took these myself recently. So here's one. Mm-hmm. So this gives you an idea of, isn't that cute and old-timey?
It's very cute. Very old-timey. Now, I'm going to assume that is not one of the train cars that you rode on while you were there.
This wagon? Yeah. Yeah, this is a train. Today, this is an Amtrak stop. So I don't think they allow this anymore. But this is what the train looked like that time. Yeah.
And for the listener, it is clearly a piece of plywood that is stapled.
It's
a hand cart for luggage. But it looks like it would really get away from you.
Yeah, I don't know why this is here. I don't know what this is trying to say about the train station. It does not look like anything that should be related to trains ever.
It's like something somebody could not throw away. They're like, you know, wait, right. I can't pitch it. It's so beautiful.
So anyway, so this is the station. But if you look back, if I had known at this time exactly the details of the story, I would have taken a better picture of the curve. But
it's a bit of a curve.
You can see it's quite a curve.
Yeah.
So this is coming into the station, obviously. And then on the way out of the station, like immediately when the station is done, it's the same curve out.
Mm.
So terrible.
Why would they put the station here? This doesn't seem like a good place for a station.
Boy, that's a great question. It's a great question. And also, I think this is the track now, obviously. I think they changed the track a bit after this, I don't want to call it an accident. I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just see where the story goes. But I think since then they've changed the track to make it less bad. Mm-hmm. So it might have been even sharper than this. Oof, but if you're a train out of control with no brakes coming down a literal mountain,
this
is bad.
That's a spooky turn. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a turn. So the train's coming down the mountain without brakes. It has to make this turn, and it's not looking good. So the train hits the curve. The engine takes it okay. Mm-hmm. It goes around fine. The smoking car, the second car, goes up on two wheels, but it doesn't leave the track. Mm-hmm. It's very, very fucking lucky. So it goes on two wheels, but it comes back on the track. The dining car is next. It also goes up on two wheels a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Also, though, doesn't leave the track. So slams back down, and it's more or less okay. But the dining car does go up high enough that it slams into the wood plank roof of the colonnade over the platform.
Ooh.
And just smashes through it completely. Like it's gone. The roof is now gone and collapsing. So the roof is collapsing. The train keeps going. Next comes the first sleeping car. This also goes up on two wheels and then comes back down. So again, still on the tracks. But now the colonnade is collapsing completely, and so these wood beams are smashing onto the train, and some of them are going into the windows.
Ooh.
It's a pretty bad scene. And then the second sleeping car, which is where our friend Myrtle is hanging out, that comes through the station, and the whip force of that, which I don't, is that the right term?
Yeah.
What did you, at the last?
Crack the whip.
Whip force?
Yeah, crack the whip.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. You're cracking the whip. Mm-hmm. You're an engineer, so I'm going to take your word for it.
That's what I call it.
You must be pretty good at your job. The crack whip thing happens, and it's really strong, and that car goes flying off the tracks.
Ooh.
And it's still obviously connected to the rest of the train,
right?
But it's now on its side, and it goes smashing through the station itself.
Oh.
Destroys the entire train station.
This sounds so cool.
God, what I would give to see that happen with no people on board, I guess I should say.
Yeah, from maybe 300 feet away-ish. Oh, man. 200.
Yeah. What a Jason Statham movie of an experience.
Oh, my goodness.
Very cool.
Mm, unfortunately.
Except for the people.
Yeah, a lot of people are in the car at this point. Yeah,
a lot of people. So now, while it's smashing through the station, the car becomes uncoupled. Mm-hmm. And it just is this train car on its side that has ripped through the station. And so the whole station collapses on the car. And it's, again, smashing through windows. It's bad. Now, the curve out of the station, as I said, is just as sharp as the curve into it. Mm-hmm. But the other cars on the train, they make it around the curve. And the next, it goes uphill from there.
Okay, yeah.
So gravity is going to finally bring it to a halt. Mm-hmm. It takes about 1 mile, though, for that to happen, because they have so much speed going. The whole thing's a wreck. It's an absolute disaster. The injuries were incredible. One man on the train, William Fitzgerald, felt, quote, a horrible sensation in my leg. It felt as if someone was tearing it from my body. He would later look down to see that a piece of debris had shorn his calf completely away from his leg, leaving only bone behind.
Hmm. Well, that's about right then.
Yeah.
Feels like someone's ripped the leg from my body. And,
oh, somebody ripped the leg from my body.
Yeah. what are the odds?
Recovery? Jesus, the calf muscle?
Mm-hmm.
Woof. It's not ideal.
Mm-hmm. it's especially this time when there's no medicine. I mean, there's nothing like the only medicine is just, you know, stop screaming. That's just stop screaming.
Can I put some leeches on it?
Yeah.
Will that help? Yeah.
Quick, run to the wharf and buy some leeches. Oh, it's not that kind of a wharf. Oh, this will be tricky. No.
We will order some. They will take 6 months to get here. So it's obviously very bad, but all of the passengers are pulled to safety. Every single one.
Mm-hmm. All their bits and pieces. Everything.
No, everyone lives. Everyone lives.
Wow.
Oof. Well, except for one person.
Mm.
When they pull Myrtle from the wreckage, mm-hmm. they find that one of her legs is nearly severed.
Mm-hmm.
And
the other guy lost his, though. So.
Well, that was the good leg, because right. her other leg had a 3-foot splinter jammed through it.
Mm.
And then another splinter had pierced her femoral artery.
Oh, that's a big one.
That's an important one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they pull her out, and she only lived for a few minutes after they got her out of the train, because you need that artery,
mm-hmm.
for sure. So she is the one death, which, I mean, is really incredible
mm-hmm.
that it was only one, but obviously very sad. Now, this is a good I told you so moment.
I was going to say her dad. Is he is of two minds at the moment.
Gonna leave that hanging there.
He's gonna come home to the wife, and he's gonna be like, I've got bad news. Yes, but
I was right.
So
oh boy. One observer noted, quote, it was plain to the observer from the expression of her features that during the last few minutes of her life, after the terrible blows and piercing wounds her body had received, that internal pain tortured her as the current of her life was ebbing away.
Hmm. Not so how you want to go.
No, she had a bad time. and of course, her ghost is still there at the train station, which has been rebuilt. Mm-hmm. It's a rebuilt yep. station. And I have a picture of it for you as it stands today, which is, well, this obviously, yes, mm-hmm. but... Nope. What is that?
Not as good.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, very nice. Very pretty.
Yeah, which I think mimics the style that the original station
mm-hmm.
was
yeah.
in.
Yeah, it's like yeah. like a white brick on the bottom, and then a red brick above.
Yeah, and they call it a bungalow style.
Oh, okay.
That's what I read on the interwebs.
I can see that. It's got that bungalow yeah. roof. Yep.
Yeah, I live in a bungalow, and this looks it's bigger than my house.
Sure. But yeah.
Yeah, it's, some similarities. There's for
parking
sure.
out front, even. I mean, it's very, very nice.
Must be nice. Unlike when you come to town with your truck and you have to navigate very carefully through my driveway, because it is so narrow. So she's still there. She's sometimes seen wandering the station wearing her nightgown, which is what she's wearing, of course, in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
She's also known for pulling the hair of female travelers.
Mm, that's not nice.
Which is not nice.
Why would you do that? That's
I don't know. That feels just like, you know, I was on her side until now.
Yeah.
She has also been seen peering into the windows of the station building.
They're
specifically in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be sitting there. Because, again, this is now an Amtrak station. So Amtrak trains run through there regularly.
And they can tell the difference between her and, like, other people, you know, looking in the windows.
Of
the, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She's in a nightgown.
Yeah. Again, yeah. How many Amtrak stations you've been to?
Oh, good point. God.
I mean, this one. Okay. This one falls pretty squarely on that thin line of, is this a ghost or is this...
All right, that's
or is
fair.
This a scam? Yeah.
all right. Now, fair enough.
But does she have the look? The excruciating look of life being, you know, of her life current being drained from her.
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes
sense. Okay. Yes. Then yeah, that's scary.
So she is there, certainly. The whole Civil War thing also was bad for the station. Every once in a while, people will see the ghost of a man named D.C. McLeary stumbling around the tracks. D.C. was a Confederate soldier who got hit by a train in 1861 when he was super drunk and didn't know where he was going.
The Confederate Army, the ultimate unfinished business.
And there are also, quote, strange lights, spooky shadows, and ghostly voices hanging out around this station. And that is the story of the Stanton train station and the ghost / ghosts that haunt it still today.
Wow.
Yeah. You want to go visit?
Maybe someday.
And your friend Griffin McElroy is 2 hours away.
That's right.
Go visit Griffin.
Go visit them. And then Benny Boy's up in D.C. as well. So.
And you reminded me that Benny was up there. I forgot. Ben Unclesby. Those of you who read the Apocalypticon book, the other main character, Ben Fogelvy, is modeled after our friend Ben Unclesby. I'm pretty good at names of characters.
Obviously.
And he lives in D.C. And I forgot about that. I'm really excited. I need to reach out to him and see what his old deal is. So yeah, you can do a whole tour of the Eastern Seaboard.
People I know in the Eastern Seaboard. Literally, 3 visits. And then back home.
I mean, you know people in New York. You know Percy.
I should definitely go into New York and hang out with Percy and Hollis for maybe a week, something like that.
You and they would love that.
Yeah.
I think both the same amount. Oh boy. Well, that is, I guess, our show for this week. It's been it's good to be back. Good to be back. Good to be doing it again. This is a great show that is produced by Smith Show Media. This story was written down by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes are from Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media manager is Kai Villanis. And gosh, I guess we'll do this again next week. Let's keep going. This is episode 98. So close to the big 100.
Has anybody pitched any ideas for episode 100?
Yep.
Okay. Are they good ideas?
Yep.
Oh boy. Well, I'm excited.
And I'm not telling you any of them. You're going to find out with everyone else in 2 episodes. And it's going to be a blast. It's going to be fun. I think if it all works out, there's a lot of fun ahead for episode 100. So join us then. And, you know, in the meantime, take care of yourself. Be safe, because otherwise you might be the next subject of Is This a Ghost?